We could sing all night. I tell you, scared me just a few moments ago when Sonny said we were going to speed up on one of these things. I've come to realize more and more how true it is that as Christians, there's not any single part of our life that is not changed because we're Christians. I mean, every thought that we think, every reaction that we have in our lives has changed because of Jesus. I remember some of you that are younger than I can't remember the first time that you were on a computer, but I can remember the first time that I was ever sat down and got on a computer. In fact, I had kind of made up my mind that I was going to go ahead and finish my life out and not own a computer. But that didn't seem like it was going to be very practical and maybe not possible. And so I bought a computer and had a good friend who actually was the head of the computer science department at the University of Southern Mississippi. And when I got this computer, I said, Joe, you're going to have to come help me set this thing up and show me how to use it. And of course, being the head of computer science department and trying to relate something to me about the computer didn't work. And he started saying some stuff. You know, I don't know what it was about. And he got two or three sentences into this. I said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Wait just a minute. I said, Joe, you don't understand. The first thing that you have to do is tell me, how do I turn this thing on? And I wrote it down. And then once he got it on, he started, I said, no, wait a minute, you don't understand. I have to take whatever I'm supposed to do next, I'm going to write it down. And I know that he thought this was ridiculous. And after a little while, he finally said, Ken, there's something that you need to understand. He said, take your finger and just hit a key. I said, which key? He said, it doesn't matter, just hit a key. Just hit a key. And I said, well, no, which key? He said, just hit any key that you want to hit. And so I hit a key. He said, hit another one. I said, which one? He said, any key. It doesn't matter which one. And I hit another one. He said, take all 10 of your fingers and hit keys with them. And I said, why? He said, just do what I tell you. So I took 10 fingers. I hit it. He said, do it again. I hit it. He said, do it some more. Pound on it. And when I did, he said, okay, now what I want you to understand is you can't tear this thing up. He said, you can't do anything to this that I can't undo. And so you need, the first thing that you need to understand is don't be afraid of this. Well, I found out that he exaggerated somewhat because I had a 17-year-old Russian kid that thought he knew everything about a computer, and when he left me with six viruses, six different viruses. And so I had to end up, you know, I mean, he had to download a bunch of this music stuff with this shareware thing, and so you're just opening your computer up for people to come in, and they're opening theirs up for you to come in, and there's some folks who will buy an old computer and load it up with viruses and invite you in. And so I couldn't reach him with my hands, which was really a good thing for him. But we had an interesting conversation on the phone about the fact that he was never going to get in the room where my computer was as long as he lived when he got back home. I want to talk. I'm going to start a series of lessons tonight. I'm pretty big on series. I haven't done that much, but I'm going to start a series for Sunday nights on doubt. Because I feel like that part of my responsibility is to help you grow your faith. And I want to tell you that part of your responsibility is to help me grow my faith. And that's really what we're about together as Christians. And one of the things that's involved in growing faith, one of the things that can be a hindrance if we allow it, is doubt. And so we're going to have a few lessons on doubt, and I hope to be able to change your mind maybe even a little bit about the whole concept of doubt. And let me start with a little illustration that I ran across some time back. The peasant walked behind the little donkey, striking him. A huge load of firewood was strapped to his back. The little donkey valiantly struggled its way up the steep path. Spurred on by incessant threats, he staggered a few paces further and sank to the ground, defeated. The peasant beat him, and beat him, and beat him again. And I wonder how many of us as Christians have a faith like that. Believe this, believe that, stop doubting, believe more firmly, and the admonitions and the fears are piled on faith's back until it can take no more. The big stick comes out then, guilt, and weak faith clings on for dear life until finally, overloaded and undernourished, faith sinks to the ground and dies. There are few, if any of us, who do not, or at least have not, experienced times of doubt in our life. And most often we handle our doubt by not handling it, by ignoring it, refusing to admit that doubts exist, by refusing to talk to anyone about it, by forcing it to the back of our minds and refusing to give it any serious consideration, or we get involved in other things and keep our mind off of it. We know where we want to be in our life. Paul will write the Philippians, and he will say, "Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will," and let me give you a literal translation of this last part, "the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will stand sentinel on your emotions and your thoughts in Christ Jesus." And it's those emotions and those thoughts where doubt finds its most fertile area, doesn't it? And we really do want to have God's peace to stand constant sentinel on our thoughts and our emotions and keep them under control for us. But how do we get there? How do we handle these doubts? And so tonight we're going to lay a little foundation for some future lessons. There are three things that I want to share with you about doubt. First of all, don't be afraid of doubt. Anybody who believes anything seriously is familiar with doubt. You don't arrive at decisions seriously in your life without going through some doubt. And it is wading through that doubt that helps us arrive at those conclusions. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." You see, deep faith comes only as a result of admitting and facing and overcoming the doubts that are involved in that process. Augustine said a long time ago that Christians are people who think in believing and believe in thinking. Are we still? Are we still? Or do we think somewhere in the back of our mind that we have to park our brains to be a Christian? And that we are like a little bird in a nest with our mouth open, and whatever somebody crams in and comes along, then we just accept it. Because after all, if that person, you know, if he's a preacher or if he's an elder or if he's a teacher or whatever, he must know. And so we just swallow whatever comes along. If we constantly force ourselves to believe things that we doubt, then we're going to be in danger of undermining our personal integrity and in some cases perhaps even our mental stability. Because we're forcing ourselves to build on the foundation that we don't really believe. And we're afraid to try and find out if it's really real, because what if it's not real? But if ours is an examined faith, and I will say this numerous times in my life with you, if the Lord gives me time for that. The Lord never asked us to believe something that he did not give us more than adequate evidence to believe that. I believe that. And my faith is an examined faith. That doesn't mean that I don't have questions. I have questions. I always have had questions. And when I get those questions answered, then I'm at a new place, but guess what? There's a whole new set of questions. And if I ever get all those questions answered, then guess what? I'll be in a new place, but there's going to be some more questions. And so I've realized that the day that I die, I'm going to die with some questions. And you know, I've come to like that. That used to make me afraid because I didn't have the answer to certain questions. I thought I had to have the answer to all those questions. And then some of those questions, I now have some answers for that at least satisfy me. And then all of a sudden, that brings on a whole new crop of questions. And that's good. That's not a bad thing. But if ours is an examined faith, we don't have to be afraid of doubt. If doubt is eventually justified, then we were believing something that wasn't worth believing. You don't have to carry your faith around and protect it. In fact, a mature faith will protect you. You don't have to protect it. It will stand the test of scrutiny. And if it turns out that your doubts are answered, then our faith has grown yet stronger. And so don't be afraid of doubt. Doubt doesn't have to be your enemy unless you let it be. And so the first thing is, don't be afraid of doubt. The second one is, there's value in doubt. Let's turn it over and make it a positive here. Handled honestly, it's a safeguard against an unnecessary breakdown of faith. Here's what I mean by that. One of the realities of every age is that the most intelligent people of the age, or at least it seems that way quite often, the intellectuals have come to discard faith. And that does something to us, particularly when we're young, and particularly when we sit under teachers who ridicule our faith, and we look up to those people intellectually. And we think, if that person says that he can't believe, then I must be kind of simple-minded if I do believe. And it seems to be the really educated thing to do, to not believe. This causes us to suspect that Christian faith is fragile and maybe a little bit vulnerable with very little intellectual integrity or honesty. You remember Paul writing in Romans chapter 1, verse 22, talked about those people who, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And I always have a smile when I read or quote that verse, because the word fool in the Greek there is M-O-R-O-S, and we get the word moron from it. Professing themselves to be wise, they become morons. You ever known anybody so smart that they were kind of moronic? So intellectual that just really simple things escape their grasp? Have you ever felt a sense of relief to discover a person that you considered to be really maybe an intellectual type person and somebody who's really well educated, and yet they believe in the total verbal plenary inspiration of the Bible? You ever found? I have somebody like that. Unfortunately, he died a few years ago, but some of you know Dr. Furman Curley. And Dr. Furman Curley was one of my heroes. I sat in a number of his classes, and he received his doctorate degree from Hebrew Union, and yet he believed in the verbal, word-for-word inspiration of the Bible. And he came into my life at a good time for me with that. Because, well, I won't tell you all of why because right now. But I just needed somebody at that point in my life. Somebody that I could really look up to. And somebody that I felt like had been through the fires and still believed in the verbal inspiration of the Bible. And so he and I had some conversations, and I got the opportunity to tell him how much I appreciated that fact about himself. The problem is not doubt itself. The problem is the fear of doubt and how we respond to it. It's a refusal to honestly examine the evidence. And sometimes we refuse to examine the evidence because we're afraid that we're not going to be able to believe it. We're afraid it won't stand the test. And so we just don't go there. And we just don't teach that. And we just don't preach that. And we just say, okay, you've got to accept that. And we won't allow ourselves to examine it because we're afraid maybe it'll come up short. What if it's really not true? What's that going to mean in my life? Truth will handle the test of truth. And you don't have to be afraid of it. Now, you do need to be reminded that you don't have all the answers from your own personal experience. You might have to go outside, and you will have to go outside your own personal experience to have some questions intelligently answered. But handled honestly, doubt is a safeguard against an unnecessary breakdown of faith. And also, doubt causes us to anchor our faith in the real principles of Christianity and to get rid of some of the junk. And I call it junk advisedly. And probably I should say reluctantly. But in reality, many people become Christians and continue in that lifestyle for some reason other than faith in God. Have you ever done something right for a less than noble reason? I have. But that's not all bad. Sometimes we beat ourselves up for that. That's not all bad. Don't feel guilty if you were attracted to Christianity because of Christian friends or maybe a spouse or a mother or a father or you saw something in the lifestyle of a Christian that was to your liking. Don't be ashamed if that was an attraction. You don't have to hide that fact. That's what those things were intended to do, to make the gospel attractive. And if that's what influenced you as a Christian, then realize that's what God designed them for. But don't allow your faith to stay right there and rest in that person. In some ways, in some senses, we all inherit a second-handed faith, particularly if we grew up in a Christian home. Our parents taught us some things, didn't they? And we believed it because my mom and dad believed it, and that's what they taught me. But at some point, we have to make that faith our own, and that's a scary voyage, isn't it? It's scary to push out away from that bank and start questioning things for ourselves because of some of the things we've already mentioned. Maybe we'll find out that mom and dad didn't know what they were talking about. Maybe our faith won't stand that test. Is Jesus real? Is there really a God? And parents sometimes just go all, you know, apoplexy whenever the child comes home and said, Mom, Dad, I'm not sure if I believe there's a God or not. And I've had parents call me at some really strange times of the night sometimes because their child has come home and said, I'm not sure if I believe there's a God or not. Well, you know, you've got to go through that. You've got to decide. If you're going to have a real faith, you've got to decide if there's a God or not. You've got to look at the evidence for yourself. You've got to decide if Jesus Christ is God's Son, if there's sufficient evidence for you to believe that. And if you don't, then your faith will never be yours. It'll never be something. You'll always have to carry it around and protect it. And it won't ever mature and protect you. There's an old song, and it's an old song. Give me that old-time religion. Remember that song? And there's a line in it that says, if it was good enough for Paul and Silas, then it's good enough for me. This may not burst your bubble because you don't have to believe this, but I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that just because it was good enough for Paul and Silas, it's good enough for me. If it's good enough for Paul and Silas, it was good enough for Paul and Silas. But I'm going to have to decide if it was good enough for me. I'm going to have to look at the evidence for myself. And the fact that if, in fact, it was good enough for Paul and Silas, that's some evidence. And I'll weigh that in with it. But that doesn't answer the question. That doesn't settle my doubts. I've got to face my doubts for myself. And you see, a second-hand faith, and listen to me, will produce involvement, but not commitment. Because to be truly, wholeheartedly committed to the Lord and His cause, it's got to be real to me. It's got to stand the test to me. And that doesn't happen overnight. And remember, once I answer the questions I've got right now, there's likely to be some more questions. But as those questions continue to be answered in my life, and I don't get overly hasty about rejecting or accepting something, but I give those things some time in my heart and in my mind and in my life, then my faith gets more and more solid. And it gets more and more real. And it's going to take a lot more to shake my faith than it did 20 years ago. In fact, it's really going to take something to shake my faith at this point in my life. A few years ago, my faith, on occasion, was shaken. And it scared me. Because for one thing, I had been taught that you don't doubt. And so when I did have doubts, I didn't know what to do with them, except just be afraid and maybe try to push it to the back of my mind. But there's some advantage to doubt. Doubt can be your friend. Doubt can thirdly be used to detect error. We usually learn the hard way that everything is not as it seems, and we become skeptics in this life. And we kind of laugh about that, but you know, the word, there is a Greek word for a skeptic, and it's pretty close. It's skeptikos, and the word means an inquirer, somebody who asks questions. So it's not bad to be a skeptic, to ask questions. There are questions that must be asked. And Jesus wasn't trying to be poetic whenever he described Satan as the father of liars. Because you see, Satan's, one of his most basic tools is half-truths. And somebody can take a half-truth and really doctor it up and make it look like a whole truth, and particularly someone in a classroom, a teacher that kids look up to and respect, they can take a half-truth and they can doctor that up and really just talk condescendingly about somebody who has faith and intimidate us out of our faith if we allow them. But doubt can be used to detect error. Doubt challenges us to find out for ourselves. And then one last thing I want to say in setting this up, this study up. Doubt is not unbelief. And maybe this is the most important thing that I'm saying in this lesson tonight. Doubt is not the same thing as unbelief. And maybe we've been led or allowed ourselves to think that it is. Our English word doubt comes from a Latin word that means two. The number two. And let me tell you how that relates so that you can understand why this is so important. To believe something is to be of one mind about that thing. To disbelieve something is to be of one single mind against that thing. But to doubt is to be of two minds. Sometimes we think maybe it is, sometimes we think maybe it's not, and we're looking at both sides of this thing. It is to be of two minds. It's pretty neat, isn't it? It pretty well describes what doubt is. I haven't got my mind made up. My mind won't settle on this. I'm not sure about this. I think maybe it is. I think maybe it's not. To be of two minds. The New Testament translates five words as doubt. And we're not going to go into those five words right now. But Jesus expected his disciples to go beyond the stage of doubting to a point of total trust and belief. And consequentially, and only when they got to that point, to total dedication. You can't be totally dedicated until you are of one mind about this thing. Until you settle some really basic fundamental questions. And he spent a lot of his time assisting his disciples with their doubts. Why do you think that he walked to them on water? I mean, there's lots of ways that he could have gone where they were going without walking to them on water. Why did he walk to them on water? Because he was helping them with their doubts about who he was, wasn't he? Why did he let them see so many of the miracles? Why did he let them fish all night long and then tell them to cast their nets over on the deep side over there? Why did he let them fish all night long before he told them to do that? Because they're never going to forget that. Because it's going to settle some questions in their mind that they're going to have settled. Doubt is not the same thing as unbelief. And no misconception causes more concern and anxiety to sincere, sensitive, searching people. And the answer is not beat the donkey till he dies and keep loading him up and get out the big stick of guilt and beat him until he dies. That's not the answer. You remember the story in Mark chapter 9? Jesus and his three of his disciples had just come down from the Mount of Transfiguration. They got down there at the base, and all the other disciples, there was a large crowd of people gathered around them, and teachers of the law were arguing with them, and the people saw Jesus, and they came running to him, and Jesus asked, and I'm in Mark 9:16, what are you arguing with them about? He asked his disciples. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son who's possessed by a spirit that robbed him of his speech. When it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, grinds his teeth, and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Oh, unbelieving generation. He put his finger right squarely on the problem immediately. Oh, unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground, rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It's often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. And I love Jesus' answer. What do you mean, if you can? Jesus said, everything is possible to him who believes. And immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help my unbelief. That's where I am. And that's where I've been all my life. Now, I'm further down the road toward belief than I was. But I have a belief system, and it's strong. But there's also some things that I don't understand. There's also some questions right there. And I'm going right down my road of faith, and I just come right head on sometimes to some of those questions. And I don't have all the answers for them. But that's the attitude that I want to have. Lord, I do believe. And help me in the areas that I need some help in. Help my unbelief. You know, we spoke this morning about the idea of pain and the value of pain. And in some ways, we're talking about something similar here. Probably, if you were to go out here in the world and ask people, if there were one thing you could take out of the world, what would it be? I would say that if it weren't the very top thing, that one of the top things would be pain that people would take out, wouldn't they? And we'd make a really, really serious mistake if we took pain out of existence. Now, we like being able to control it, certainly. But maybe spiritually, if we could take doubt out, we would. But if we did, we'd be making a mistake. Because it's on the road to faith. It's part and parcel of developing faith. And it's not your enemy unless you let it be your enemy. Don't be afraid of doubt. There's value in it. And remember, doubt is not unbelief. And we're headed towards something. We're all headed towards something. And that is a solid faith. And you see, if it's true and if it's real, you don't have to protect it. It will protect you. You don't have to carry it. it will carry you. And that's where I'm headed in my life. And I want you to join hands and go with me, or some of you are ahead of me. And so let me join hands and let's go together. And in the next few Sunday nights, we're going to be talking about how we can use doubt to our advantage in a number of different ways. But if tonight you're here and doubt has been a real problem in your life, then maybe you need the prayers of brothers and sisters. You know, I've heard us say quite often that somebody needs prayers. But technically, and I'm not trying to just, you know, make you self-conscious about semantics here, technically we don't need prayers. We need God, and we need God's help. And prayer is one avenue through which we can enlist God's aid in a particular incident. And so if there is a need that you have in your life that you need God to help you with, and he says the faithful, fervent prayer of a righteous man gets a lot done. And that's why we're here. We're family, to pray for one another. And if there's a struggle that you have in your life that you need God's attention with that, then God makes a really incredible thing available to you to let brothers and sisters sit down with you and pray about that. And so if there's a need in your life that can be met with a public response, it's your opportunity while we stand and sing.